Continuing through chapter 4. We'll be covering texts 12 and 13. What did we discuss yesterday? Let's go past that. What did we discuss yesterday?
Krishna creates the cosmic manifestation. So it expands into different phantoms and
he expands in various expansions and
impregnates the material world. We're discussing how Shukadeva Goswami was farming and training this Maharaj patient. We started with Shukadeva Goswami describing how great the Lord is. So, first you have to understand, because we are in material energy, so understanding how this material energy works, this will make us understand how great the Lord is. Then in relation to the previous classes, then we can be able to love God and
others?
Qualifications, qualifications of the speaker, like Sutta Goswami.
What were his qualifications?
Should be learned, realized, and unconditional devotee of the Lord. He recognized that he cannot do anything independent of the Lord, although he has the skills of the devotee of the Lord.
The point we discussed after this that how to remember Krishna and work do the prescribed duties simultaneously.
Uh-huh.
And we were discussing some of the aspects like at least it should be theistic, a way of life we should live, then we should do the give up for the proof, and then it should be the stage where we are working only for Krishna. And then because we get to hearing, we should hear very attentively. Submissively, and we should hear steps in hearing also.
What was the last part?
We should hear very submissively.
Submissively, okay.
And you describe how we should assimilate, you describe. And
very good. Other points?
Describing his aunt, that even if he's present in everyone, he's still the Guru. Even if he creates this world, then he's unaffected by this creation. And it's like ocean taking small glass of water, ocean, and the ocean feeding it. There is no analogy to it.
Okay, just on that particular verse from Brahma Samhita, the last line is actually the high point of that verse as far as our discussion yesterday. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atmabhakta means, how does that apply to this?
He is describing the Vedas, but through Vedas he cannot be achieved.
Through which?
Through intellectual reading.
Intellectual study reading.
He cannot be achieved. He can only be achieved by pure bhakti. He gives himself to his devotees freely.
And that's why the devotee can understand him. Any other points? Yeah?
Maharaj, you said that Maharaj Parikshit took every opportunity to go deeper into go deeper within himself to understand Krishna and his energies. And also you said the role of descending mercy. I won't try, but descending mercy is a place also within the descending mercy that they can understand Krishna.
The Lord takes pleasure in making his devotee more powerful than himself. So it is important that we take shelter of the spiritual master if at all we are interested in knowing Krishna, because that's the way Krishna will reveal himself, because spiritual master is a pure devotee.
So. Examples that Prabhupada gave, how the Lord likes to make his devotee more powerful than him.
Hanumanji.
Hanuman.
Ambarish Maharaj.
Ambarish Maharaj. His discussion with Uddhava. I accept my devotee, surrendered devotee, to be as good as myself. That means he makes that devotee like that. So these are confidential things about a devotee and devotional service. And Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukadeva Goswami to explain about the material energies, because even the material energies are inconceivable, how they're working. And he's appreciating that Shukadeva Goswami has the qualification. Again, not only because he's learned, but he has realized everything. And he has this empowerment from Krishna because he's a pure devotee, unaware devotee of Krishna. And he demonstrates that unaware devotion by, before speaking, his mind becomes completely concentrated upon the Supreme Lord. He's calling upon the Supreme Lord to assist him or enable him to be his instrument, to serve him properly, to speak on his behalf in a proper way, leaving aside all independent spirit. So that by so doing, Prabhupada ends that purport by saying the defects of the conditioned soul are now gone, because the Supreme Lord controls the senses of his devotee, because the devotee submits his senses to the Lord. In service, the Lord controls his senses. So text 12. Now Shukadeva Goswami speaks. So 12, 13, 14, they're a cluster, they go together. His mind is concentrated, his mood is fully submissive, he's an instrument of the Lord, he understands himself in that way. Then he speaks. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who for the creation of the material world accepts three modes of nature. He is the complete whole, residing within the body of everyone, and his ways are inconceivable. So there's three things that Shukadeva Goswami is saying that the Supreme Lord does or performs. Grihita Shakti Chittayaya. he accepts the three modes of material nature. We'll come back to this one. He's residing within the body. He's the complete whole residing within the body of everyone. Dehinam antar bhavaya. And his ways are inconceivable. Anupalaksha vardmane. So, what does it mean that he accepts three modes of material nature? If we accept something, it the implication is there's something outside of ourselves, and we receive it and we accept it. You know, someone offers me a cookie and I accept it, or if they offer something. They offer you a free ticket to Timbuktu, and so you accept it. So, Krishna's accepting is different, because there isn't something outside of Krishna. In fact, accepting, is it transitive verb? There's action going on. He manifests. So what Prabhupada explains in the purport, the material world is a manifestation of the three modes of good dispassion and ignorance, and the Supreme Lord for creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world accepts three predominating forms as Brahma, Vishnu, and Shankara, or Shiva. So that's how he accepts. He manifests form. They're avatars. There's six categories of avatars discussed by Lord Chaitanya with Sanatana Goswami, and one of those six is guna avatars. Somebody like to recite what the six categories of avatars are? Or what are some of the categories of the avatars?
Lila
avatar. Everyone knows Lila avatars.
Yuga avatar.
Yuga avatar. Shaktivesha avatar.
Purusha avatar.
Purusha avatars. Two to go. We're almost there. Manvantara avatar. And then this one, guna avatars. We got a complete list. So he accepts the three modes of material nature. For the creation of the material world, he accepts the three modes of material nature. He doesn't become conditioned by the three modes of material nature. In fact, something that Prabhupada taught us, like, over and over and over and over and over again, is the personality of Godhead never comes in contact with the modes of nature. Lord Brahma, in the guna avatar category, Brahma generally is a jiva, and he performs the work of creation. But Shiva is in his own category, Shiva Tattva, and he directly contacts material nature. the original act of procreation is the glancing of the personality of Godhead by his glance, which is carried by Lord Shiva. Shiva directly contacts material nature as a service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada calls this the original act of procreation. But the Mahavishnu never directly contacts. By his glance he contacts, but never directly contacts the modes of nature. So say he accepts is to be understood this way. He accepts three predominating forms as Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh. He manifests such forms. Guna avatars. So they're forms of the Lord for the purpose of creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. The next is, he is the complete whole residing within the body of everyone. This point was mentioned in a review, but it's certainly inconceivable. The complete whole is within a fragmental part. It would be much easier to think of a fragmental part as within the complete whole. Much easier. The other way is inconceivable. The complete whole is within a fragmental part. I remember one of Prabhupada's disciples, Sachi Sutta, was describing to me a question he asked Prabhupada. Prabhupada describes in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that the Supersoul is the height of between the thumb and the forefinger, like 6 inches. And that Supersoul is within the heart of the Jiva Soul, who is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, not even to be seen by a microscope, most powerful microscope. How is that? And Prabhupada's answer was, what is the problem? So they went on in the discussion and on in the discussion, different things, and Sachi Sutta asked the question again, and he got the same answer. The Lord has inconceivable potencies. Anor aniyamsam anusmaradyaha. He has mystic cities. He's the source. He's Yogeshwara. So he can make himself smaller than the smallest, while at the same time being bigger than the biggest, because he has such capacity and mystic power. Besides, it's a contradiction. It's something that we can't even conceive of. But while we can't conceive of it, by his inconceivable potencies, the Lord does. So he's the complete whole. Shukadeva Goswami is saying he accepts the modes of nature in order to form the creation. He situates himself as the complete whole within the body of everyone. That's another thing. It's not just one jiva, but simultaneously all jivas, and all jivas are everywhere, sarvagata. So it's the all-pervasive supersoul, different than the all-pervasive Brahman. It's the all-pervasive supersoul. So he has his localized feature, all-pervasive, and quite inconceivable. And his ways are inconceivable. Anupalaksha, Vartmane. Vartmane means path or way. Vartma. And Anupalaksha, inconceivable. You cannot with the senses perceive, nor with the mind grab a hold of, or encompass, enclose the personality of Godhead. His ways are inconceivable. While his ways are inconceivable, Shukadeva Goswami is going to describe his ways, which is inconceivable. And once again, how is he able to do that? We reviewed. Not just by he's a great scholar, but most important that he's a great devotee. And so the Lord has empowered him to understand that which is inconceivable. So let's touch on that one a little bit. Is it possible to understand something that's inconceivable? Yes. Inconceivable means it doesn't fit within your mind. It's beyond the expanse of the mind. But it's also knowable. That is, if Krishna so chooses, if he illumines the heart with that, with certain understanding, it's not a mental exercise, it's a revelation. It's a fact that one can understand. But not by mental speculation or conceptualizing or any kind of mental gymnastic. You going? You'll send me the finished and more, right? Okay. His ways are inconceivable. Here's how Prabhupada describes this. Because philosophers and mystic yogis cannot conceive of the personality of Godhead, he is called Anupalapsha Vartmane, the Lord of the inconceivable way. So specifically, it refers to inconceivable by the mind, either by becoming a muni, a big thinker, one who can expand the mind, like big time, or a yogi who can focus the mind, and still you can't penetrate into the mystery of the Supreme Lord unless he discloses it, then you can know. And he likes disclosing himself through his devotee. This is how Shukadeva Goswami begins. He's offering respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, invoking one of the things that when specific glories of the Lord are mentioned in prayers, it invokes that feature of Him. It like empowers that feature of Him in one's consciousness. And similarly, by hearing such prayers of Shukadeva Goswami, it helps awaken that appreciation of Him in our consciousness, not just in the mind, and there's okay, another piece of information to manage. It's spiritual. It acts to awaken our consciousness. So he accepts, for the purpose of creation, he accepts the modes of nature. That is, he manifests these Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh. He, as the complete whole, manifests himself within the heart of every living being. That is, you know, so that he can. There's a function that Supersoul performs. That is, he oversees and he permits. It's two functions. Upadrashta Anumantacha, 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He is observing everything. The antaryami, he's the witness, and he then permits. So while witnessing and permitting, he's remaining neutral. The example Prabhupada gives is of the high court judge. The high court judge is not rooting for this side or that side. His business is to understand what is fair and just, what is, you know, what has been done and what is appropriate for what has been done. That's the, he's neutral. Meaning, if he awards, okay, you should get so much money, and to another one, you should go to jail, and another one, you should be hanged, another one, you should be freed. He's not exhibiting partiality to this one and animosity towards that one. He remains neutral. So, that's an important understanding for the next verse, because now we're on the Purusha avatars, because the Purusha, for the purpose of creation, the Purusha avatars have been expanded. And the Lord of the Heart, as the overseer and permitter, he remains neutral. He's the witness of activity of the living entity. And according to the activity of the living entity, their karma, and according to their guna, the modes of nature with which they associate, with which they desire to associate and have the habit of associating with, he makes the arrangement of the configuration of matter, which is very important for a devotee to know. Because if we want to change the configuration of matter, where do you go? You go to the personality of God, and you don't go manipulating things around. Because it's like a bungee cord. It's going to go right back to where it was. Because the Lord is in control. We're not. You follow? A devotee knows that, and so his business isn't controlling, manipulating, micromanaging. The devotee goes to the Lord, just like Shukadeva Goswami, before speaking. So before there's a circumstance that may concern us in the world, maybe in your life, in your family, or something that concerns you. And what do you do? What does the devotee do? He knows how the configuration of matter came to be, that the super soul has arranged it like that. He's in control of his energy. So by being Krishna conscious, perhaps by placing some request before the Supreme Lord, can you, this person is suffering, can you do something to help this person suffering? I'll be happy to be your instrument in so doing, or however you'd like to orchestrate it, but so the devotee prays for the welfare of another. And it works. I mean, depending upon the qualification of the praying person. And also, you know, the intention of the Lord for the well-being of that individual. But so some situation, not that the Lord will, you know, neither one of these two things. He's whimsical and people are just put in a difficult situation because he's fried with them. I mean, they're in a certain situation because of their guna and karma. So it's not that the Lord is whimsical. And we just make some petition, it'll stop being whimsical. And, you know, do things properly, because we know what properly is. Not like that. Nor that we just, you know, rant and rave, and the purpose of our austerities and devotional service is that we want to control Krishna, who controls matter. Not like that either. But out of genuine compassion and concern, when there is prayer for the protection and safety or well-being or circumstance of life of someone that's undergoing difficulty, the Lord knows that, and he can assist that living entity to understand their situation. and adjust their consciousness. In other words, because the devotee intervenes, the Lord intervenes. Because someone becomes dear to a devotee who is dear to Krishna, then that person becomes dear to Krishna. This spills into how the neutral super soul deals differently with the devotees and the non-devotees, the suras and the asuras. It looks like he's got favorites. He likes this group, and the other group, you know, he disfavors. Not so. It looks like that, though. So we'll discuss that. Text 13. I again offer my respectful obeisances unto the form of complete existence and transcendence, who is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses and the destroyer of further advances in atheistic temperament for the non-devotee demons. For the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, he grants their specific destination. So again, there's three things. After offering obeisances, there's some sympathetic chord in the note from the previous verse and this one, that previous one saying he's the complete whole within the body of every living being. Here, he's the form of complete existence and transcendence. And the emphasis in the purport that the Prabhupada places is on form. The Lord has form, and that form is not material. The form is the form of complete existence and transcendence. So, any form is parakartos. This is not complete existence. And for that matter, any material form that you can think of is not a form of complete existence. It's a form of something, but not of complete existence. Krishna's form is the form of complete existence, which really frustrates impersonalists. How can you, as soon as you have form, you're limiting? Our reply is, as soon as you say, you can't have form, you're limiting. Can't. Limiting. So, form, that's the form of the Supreme Lord. It's not limiting. It's the form of complete existence. It just doesn't compute with the framework of reason. It's inconceivable. The form of complete existence and transcendence. So, his form, the form of the super soul, the form of Krishna when he appears in this world, and the form of the Supreme Lord out of this world. In any of those features, it's a transcendental form. So, when he comes into this world of the three modes of material nature, he doesn't become influenced by the three modes of material nature. When he performs activities, it's not because the modes of nature impel him to act like it does with us. And when we get hungry or we get tired, we really can't resist. You can fast, but you know, at a certain point you have to eat. You have to sleep. It's impelled that the modes of nature are acting. Krishna doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to appear, doesn't have to act. But he appears and he acts in his form of transcendence, uninfluenced by the modes of nature, although he's appearing within the modes of nature which he controls. And what about when people think of transcendence, or when, if persons think of transcendence, they often think of the impersonal Brahman. But that impersonal Brahman, Prabhupada is indicating by inference here, yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda potin yach chakti asti jagadanda chayan yadantaha andanta rasta paramanu chayanta rasta. It doesn't quote the whole. It's just yasya prabha, the prabha, the effulgence of the Lord. It's whose effulgence? Yasya prabha. So, as he is transcendental, his effulgence is transcendental. The spiritual sky is fully transcendental. Because it's emanating from the body of the complete transcendence. Or it too has no contact with modes of nature or karma. So, please capture this one. Those that are using material logic, which cannot approach the Supreme Lord, but by material logic, in that undifferentiated Brahman, there's transcendence because there's no activity. But as soon as you have activity, thinking in terms of this material world, then you have material influences like desire and hate, and you know, I want something, fruitive desire, and so there's action. But therefore, they think when Krishna appears in the world, he's like us. He has a form. He does activity. So they're not able to understand by that method. They misunderstand by that method. They draw wrong conclusions by that method. And they teach those wrong conclusions. And it's not just, you know, these days, it's not just somebody off in a cave in India somewhere. It's, you know, people that are hyperactive on the internet that are misinforming the populace in general. It's major, active stuff going on. And as the population of the world who it becomes internet savvy or learns this misinformation program, when before they knew nothing and now they know the wrong something, it's going to make presenting Krishna consciousness more difficult. You know, the advancement of technology and the misinformation program. So, heads up. And, you know, fortunately you're in under the radar screen. But, you know, the challenge is then also there to help those that have a, you know, their filters are becoming more, if they weren't already, misinformation filters. So when transcendental knowledge comes, it's not going to fit through their filter. They'll reject it. At least they'll think, oh, I thought it was that. I mean, you're saying it's this? And then, you know, I don't know if I trust you. If I were to trust you, then okay, it's this. Let me think about it very carefully. Let me consider it very carefully. Okay. Now I can understand. So perhaps that's the situation with some of you, that trying to understand the personality, the Bhagavan feature of the Supreme, as a form of transcendence and completeness, the expansion of that transcendental form as the Lord of the heart, a similar transcendental quality. And Brahman, yasya prabha, is transcendental because it's an expansion of that Supreme. not because there's no activity. This definition by negation doesn't work. It's like the flip side of the same coin. It's still the same coin. And transcendence, real transcendence, is something else altogether, not just the flip side of the same coin. Neti, neti. The devotees who are aware of his transcendental form render him service. Therefore, the Lord also reciprocates by his causeless mercy and thus delivers his devotees from all distresses mentioned in the verse itself. What about the rest of the people? The pious men who follow the rulings of the Vedas are also dear to him, and therefore the pious men of this world are also protected by him. The impious and the non-devotees are against the principles of the Vedas, and so such persons are always hampered from making advances in their nefarious activities, which looks like discrimination. These people are bad. I'm going to lock them up. I'm going to restrict them. I'm not going to let them do their nefarious activities. But it's kindness upon both is the point that's being... There's two points that's being made. Overall, there's two points. The Lord's dealing with the non-devotees and his dealing with the devotees is an exhibition of his equality. Although it may look like, no, he's giving the non-devotees a hard time. And in extreme cases, he kills the non-devotees. But when he gives the non-devotees a hard time, it's this. It's nefarious activities that are going to be harmful to them. He prevents them from their nefarious activities that are going to be harmful for them and for others. And if he's really merciful, he kills them. Meaning, completely liberates them from that mentality, the heinous mentality, and the reactions for all the misdeeds prior. So the soul is going to have a clean slate. Liberated. When the Lord kills the devotee, they're liberated. They're not just, you know, sent to a bad place. They're completely freed. But looks like, whoa, heavy duty. He just killed them. But he's liberating them, and because they have the mentality of wishing to be the enemy of the Lord in a neutral mood. Very well. You'd like to be my friend? I'll be your friend. You'd like to be my enemy? I'll be your enemy. It's not like, you don't like me, so I won't like you. But you would like to see me in that way? Then I'll play that role of being your enemy. And I'll liberate you. You want to be my devotee? I'll be your devotee and I'll liberate you. Of course, the types of liberation are different. The Sayuja Mukti is the destination for those that just don't like the Lord's form or the Lord's transcendental nature. So he doesn't interfere. They don't get the shelter of devotional service, in other words, because they don't have the mood of wanting devotional service. But they still get liberated. Prabhupada writes, he's just like a kind father, either in his favor upon the devotee or his punishment of the demons. He is ever kind to everyone because he is the complete existence for all individual existence. So, remember, let's recall from yesterday, the statement about Maharaj Parikshit, Mr. Shukadeva Goswami, that as a pure devotee, he abandoned any sense of independence from the Supreme Lord. And rather, in that spirit, he took permission from Krishna, or so a devotee. We're practicing to become devotees. We take permission from Krishna for all of our activities. Specifically, in the purport, Prabhupada says, what one does, what one eats, what one speaks, etc. So dependent and not independent. I can be an illusion thinking I'm independent and go through life acting independently. But that's not my real nature. I'm not independent. I'm not free to do whatever I like. That's childish. And someone restricts me and I start crying. Why are you restricting me? Loving parents don't whimsically restrict their children. They'll restrict their children for good reason. The child is not likely to understand the good reason. All they know is, I want something. You restricted me. When? Because they don't have any understanding of higher principle or higher purpose. So, when Krishna restricts the non-devotee, it's like that. It's a loving act. When Krishna reciprocates with the devotee, it's a loving act. Because it's in the real interest of the devotee. Real self-interest. And so, it's reciprocated with, and the harmful for the individual behavior, it's restricted. Both are done lovingly. Recently I was visiting in Los Angeles, and as far as I can recall, I was at baggage claim waiting for my bags to come off the carousel, and one really pious mood black lady came up and asked, are you, the classic question, are you part of some religion? Yes. What is that religion? This is what it is. And she said something very simple, very nice. She said, I believe that God is the Lord of many mansions. No, I never heard it expressed like that. It's kind of a poetic way to say. So I have my convictions of God and you have your convictions of God, but we're worshiping the same God. He just has, he's a man of many mansions, or is a being of many mansions. He gives us a place where we can do our thing, but his kindness is he wants us to do it in with him or in relation to him. I was also thinking, you know, that's a nice justification for doing what you want and saying you're in the mansion of God. So you know, you can't, the sentiment can be certainly abused. Religious sentiment can be abused easily, if not properly guided. But that's what's being indicated here. Now, the rest of the purport, or a big part of the rest of the purport, Prabhupada is explaining who really has the qualification to understand God. And the simple answer is the pure devotee. But then there are degrees of devotion. And so there's degrees of understanding God. And he describes the Paramahamsa, Paramahamsa, the supreme swan that's most detached from the world and absorbed in the supreme personality, that's the Paramahamsa, has that capacity, or has the receptivity. In the purport, Prabhupada explains, as far as the renounced order of life, the impersonalists also have this terminology, the Paramahamsa. Putichak Bahudak Paribrajak Acharya and Paramahamsa, stages of sannyas. So impersonalists have the Paramahamsa stage of sannyas. But that impersonalist Paramahamsa doesn't have bhakti. And so they don't have the capacity. So it's not just renunciation of the world that entitles one to understand the Supreme. It's being favored by the Supreme Lord, and one can understand the Supreme. You see the connection? So the devotee has that favor. The non-devotee is favored in a different way. They're checked from their nefarious activities. So the capacity of being a devotee entitles one to understand, by the grace of Krishna, things that others can't understand. It's not like, you know, a private membership club or something like that. It's just the way of life. There's no membership fee. It's not some exclusive little club. Anyone can be so entitled. Regardless, doesn't matter. Material. It's not a material thing. How smart you are, what country you're born in, what your gotra is. It's not depending upon material anything. Birth, money, past good or bad karma even. It has no relation. It's receiving the mercy of one who has carrying mercy and eagerly receiving that mercy and taking it up. So he speaks about Kunti Devi. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, as clearly stated by Kunti Devi, pure bhakti yoga is understood by the Paramahamsas, and Kunti Devi has especially mentioned that the Lord descends especially to award bhakti yoga to the Paramahamsas. There's many reasons why the Lord appears. Prithranaya sadhanam dhinashaya shadhisa. But especially it's this reason, according to Kunti Devi and according to the Bhagavatam and being confirmed by our acharyas. So what's the point here? Ultimately, the Paramahamsas, in the true sense of the term, are unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has directly accepted that the highest destination is Bhakti Yoga, by which one accepts the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Those who accept the path of Bhakti Yoga are the factual Paramahamsas. Okay, you ready for becoming a Paramahamsa? At least a little. Take the path of Bhakti Yoga, and because that's the greatest eligibility for receiving mercy, the support of Krishna, the disclosure of Krishna unto you. And when that disclosure is there, eagerness for service and detachment from illusion, phantasmagoria, follow. Last paragraph. Since the Lord is very kind to everyone, the impersonalists who accept bhakti as a means of merging into the existence of the Lord and His impersonal Brahma Jyoti are also awarded their desired destination. Merging. The verse from the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, everyone is following my path. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So it's his neutrality. Last comment is Jiva Goswami, in his Bhakti Sandarbha, he comments about this verse and the next verse. And he says that this function is a Purusha avatar function, that's not the function of the original personality of Godhead, this desires and dispensing things to this one, that one. That's a function that Vishnu performs in his role as the Purusha avatar for creation, maintenance, and dissolution. It is not a function that the personality of Godhead performs. Rather, the personality of Godhead is reciprocating directly with his loving devotees. Over here is in the created realm, where there's non-devotees and persons trying to become devotees. That's where this dispensing of desires. The rule, saying the same thing in a different way, the rule of Goloka is love. And the rule here is our desires and our piety, our willingness to surrender, and that, you know, various degrees of reciprocation of mixed material desire with something, perhaps some devotion, or at least some piety. So the advocacy is go there. But to go there, one has to pass through this stage. By surrender, hearing, chanting, remembering. By the process of devotional service. Okay. We have 10 minutes. Discussion? Yeah?
I guess when you say Lord Krishna checks one's progress in various activities, how, like, is it in terms of spiritual or like material growth? Like, he also allows, like, mercifully allows people's desires to be followed, even in spite of it being bad. He still makes sure that in this illusory world, whatever bad desires we have, he still makes that arrangement.
No. Okay. Bad desires don't always... Supposing I want to be a thief. I'm not guaranteed the privilege of becoming a successful thief. He makes no such promise, nor do we find that happening.
Yeah, my question was that he makes this arrangement of creating this world.
Yes.
So that we come here and we get a chance to purify ourselves.
Yes.
So, this checking is to be seen in terms of spiritual or material, because when I see in terms of material meaning, then I see that maybe he should check immediately.
Okay.
The result should be immediate.
Well, you understand the answer to that. It's that he doesn't interfere with your free will. So it's not his checking in the case of not interfering with free will. He allows us to come to that decision ourselves. But question for you. Is there a guarantee that the living entities that are in this world are going to return to the spiritual world? Or is it not a guarantee one can stay perpetually in the material world? It's a multiple choice with two members. Which one?
Always get association of and the surrender.
That wasn't you're making another choice. Is it a guarantee that we will return to the spiritual world? Is it a guarantee? Whatever happens, we're going to return to the spiritual world. Or can we perpetually remain in the material world? No, that's not your... Okay. The answer is, you can stay forever in the material world. Krishna may send some mercy your way, and you say, no, thank you. I'm quite happy suffering. I choose to stay here. So it will not be that he will say, I'm sorry, your time's up. You had enough of this, you know, prison life, now I'm setting you free. That may happen in, you know, the material. If someone has a crime and somebody may want to stay in the prison, they say, no, your sentence is up. Well, I don't want to go out there and work. I'm getting my food and everything here. But then you have to leave. No, Krishna doesn't do that. One can say perpetually. That's a long time, perpetually. Creation after creation after creation. So, there's free will. So, you want to expand this a little bit more? You want to pursue it a little bit more?
I mean, whatever I've heard from someone, I understand that there is, like, Lord Krishna is mostly given this arrangement, and within the free will, he is making all the arrangements so that we can, like this time, we can keep our instruction in center and we can take the right path. Like, there is always yeah. choice of good and bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. So he gives us. He's providing all facility, but we can still say no. And I've noticed that demons are very stubborn. Very stubborn. They get beaten up badly. They keep going on. We should become so tenacious. As Jarasandha was to try to destroy Krishna, we should be as tenacious. How many times? Completely wiped out entire armies. And again, and again, and again, and again. 21 times, and again. Very determined. So Krishna may send some mercy, and you know, we may not take it at all. We may take, you know, I'll take this much, and you know, we're quite whimsical. Are you okay? More on the same. Do you understand the distinction I'm making? Mm-hmm. You still got a question mark on your forehead. Later. Okay. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, sometimes the devotee surrenders, but then later on he takes to even demoniac ways.
Sure, that means he slackens or desists from his position of surrender.
So what is the status of such a devotee?
He's a fallen soul. You know, that credit for that surrender will remain in his
account.
Yeah. His permanent spiritual bank account or spiritual account.
But it's said that the spiritual master makes a commitment to deliver him, you know, any number of lifetimes necessary. How does it work?
Krishna. Krishna is the deliverer, and Krishna makes the arrangements. Krishna makes the arrangements now. Krishna makes the arrangements for as many lifetimes as it takes. It's Krishna. Krishna is the swift deliverer.
That part is clear.
Okay.
What is not clear is, suppose that he wants to be a determined demon after surrendering.
Well, Krishna may beat him down through the material energy, or personally come and beat him down. And then he's, you know, if Krishna personally comes, then by Krishna's touch, he's relieved of that reaction, of that sinful, all those sinful deeds, and his heart becomes cleansed, like Navakuvera Madhigriva. That was, you know, a more moderate version than Kamsa. Because Krishna didn't kill them, he just uprooted, you know, their pride and their offensiveness through being standing there as trees for 10,000 years really curbed their pride a whole lot. Then by touch with Krishna, their reactions, their sinful tendency was completely relieved. Now, is it possible they could again return to the demoniac ways? Yes. Or sinful ways. But by the mercy of Krishna, they were relieved of that circumstance. I mean, this is so many times statement that Prabhupada made. When the soul becomes liberated, it's not that they no longer have free will. Constitutionally, free will is there, so even becoming liberated, marginal potency, the chance, the option to act apart from Krishna, the option to act in relation to Krishna, they're there. That free will is there. So then one might think, when these reasonably, one should then again fall down, and the response to that is that Krishna makes his promise that he'll protect that devotee from again falling down, or Shikram Bhagavati Dharmatma, or Purnar Janma Nididhite. Krishna makes his assertion like that, he gives his protection.
This is in relation to, you said, the Lord is actually in control of material configuration. So when we find that again and again get into a situation of material configuration which facilitates my past conditioning of desires, it is to be understood that those subtle, although I may not explicitly know that...
Well, it may be something residual, maybe either currently or previously. Previously, one may have had some bad desire, you know, a habitual bad desire. Now one has become a devotee, and one is no longer desiring like that, but because the blades of the fan still spinning kind of thing. Because of that past, Krishna is bringing this before you so you can understand. Back there, this was, you know, your program. Here it is. You're sure. And then the devotee is firm. Says, I'm sure. Are you sure you're sure? I'm sure, I'm sure. Well, Krishna will examine. So configurations of the material energy may again manifest themselves just so that we can be sure that we're sure, and Krishna can be sure that we're sure, and then it may not, by Krishna's arrangement, even show up again. Here's a practical example. I know some people that have drug addiction. So they think, if I go over to that place, because the supplier is over right here, he knows where I am, and he's always tempting me, so I'll go to another place. But because they have that mindset, they're in that other place, here comes another arrangement. But if you were to go to that other place, you wouldn't even, even if the person came and, stood right in front of you, you wouldn't even know what it is. So it's like, I hate to quote Einstein here, but I just had this in this models of inspiration topic. The way in which we view information or the observations of an experiment has everything to do with the mindset that we have. The frame of reference, the paradigm, we see accordingly. So if the desire is gone, completely gone, not just the residual, but completely gone, then it's not even like Rishi Sringa. He didn't even know when the women came that they were women. You didn't even know what women were. Like that. But because we have some past, so some configuration of matter may present itself to see. One sense it's Maya tempting us, it's another sense it's Krishna examining us. Our experience as young Western devotees going on Sankirtan, things that we were chasing after, then, just started rolling at our feet. I remember one nice devotee commenting like this, we go on Sankirtan to the wildest places. We go to Grateful Dead concerts with Burfi, because people, when they're intoxicated, marijuana intoxicated sweets is like they have a craving, and burpees are really good. So we would just have these, we package them, but then we realized we don't need packages for these people. We just put it in a bucket. Just reached in and said, here, take this. You grab the guy and take this. You scream it because the music is so loud. Take this. And here, give them a magazine, put it in their bag, put it in their pocket. They would give a donation. Here's some incense. Then we'd go right on the floor of the concert halls, where that was our attraction before. It was music and intoxication, and at least the culture that we came from. So we can go in situations like that. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Remember, Radha Balaba came back because they found this very interesting program of distributing books late at night, because we would have these marathons all day long, and there's so many books. So they found drive-in movies. And when people go to drive-in movies, it's not for watching the movie, it's for hanging out with their girlfriend and doing stuff in the car. So they go knocking on the people, literally. And he would say, his comment to me is, the next morning we're standing, the men on this side and women on that side, and there's the attraction for between male and female. But you go on these mercy missions, and you're protected. It's not an attraction, you're giving Krishna. So, here on the campus, people may be at a university because they like the environment of, academia and, learning and competition in the academic field and get sucked up in that energy. But a devotee is protected from that because they have another mission. Doesn't mean they don't perform, but it's not with the same fuel in their tank, not with the same purpose. The purpose is altogether different. How in the midst of this energy to promote thoughtfulness of the Supreme, the goal of life, protection. So the mood of compassion and service and creating an atmosphere where a life of devotion is going to flourish, that mood is protecting. So to advance in the ways of Bhagavat Marg, one needs to be in that position of that mood. Otherwise, you're finished. Like, you know, the renunciates and advanced spirit souls of outside of Lord Chaitanya's merciful mission, they would never consider going to the West. Just even being in that atmosphere, contaminating. Krishna Smaran was sharing with you that the sannyasis in Udupi were seeing the film of Prabhupada with, you know, in Golden Gate Park with people dancing around. Unbelievable what Swamiji did, they would say. He could never do that. But he was protected because of preaching, being an instrument of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, his protection. Even whatever past desires it may be, he's just, one can adopt that mood. One is protected from those desires. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada.
Shiva Prabhupada.